Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Professor Adrian Puren, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. All right. Not bad. Thank you very much.
This is potentially very exciting news, a treatment, because we don't really have a treatment. We've got the remdesivirs. We've got a lot of different options, but we don't have something focused on COVID-19, do we?
Not that I'm aware of. I think there have been, as you said, these different trials to determine whether or not these drugs would work and under what, which circumstances. If I understood, this particular drug, I think, is aimed at the early phase of symptoms. And it reminds me of another drug that was used for influenza or is still available for influenza called Tamiflu. Mm. And so you really then have to identify individuals fairly early on in terms of their symptoms for the Tamiflu to be effective. So in other words, it really has to be given by day one or two for you to really abort the symptoms and therefore abort the infection. So I think that was probably one of the major challenges. But yes, of course, it's important to try and determine whether these particular drugs would actually be effective in terms of reduction of symptoms and therefore abortion of infections and onward transmission as well. Yes.
And what do we know about this trial, this new once-a-day tablet?
I haven't seen much, to be honest with you. It's just come out on the news, but I think it will... I'm sure we'll gain more information if there are ongoing trials as to determine under what circumstances these drugs will be applied and to determine so-called effectiveness or efficacy will be really be critical as well. As I said, I recall there was great interest in influenza when Tamiflu became available, but it certainly has waned. So I think there are certain circumstances where these drugs will actually be effective, like the remdesivir, for example, works under particular conditions, and perhaps like the Tamiflu as well. It's thought that it will work in more severe or hospitalized cases rather than at a non-hospital-based set.
The issue that I wanted to raise with you, and I wanted your thoughts to get your thoughts on it. It hadn't occurred to me, but my son lives in Israel. He arrived here and he had to go for a COVID test to make sure that he was cleared before he traveled back. And he was absolutely horrified at the price that we pay in South Africa for COVID-19 tests. In Israel, for example, they don't pay for it. So if somebody is feeling not great and they are a bit worried, should they go to an event, should they go to work or whatever it would be, they can quickly go for a test because it doesn't cost them anything. He was saying the cost of, I don't know, an odd 750 rand or 800, I don't really know the exact price. I know that medical aid generally will pay for like two a year. If you go to the state of hospitals, you have to really convince them that you need the test. Doesn't that prevent in some way the containment of COVID-19? If it was so easy, if it was free, for example, or at very low cost to get a result, then people surely would be happier to go and get COVID tests.
So I think, you know, organizations like the WHO, Africa CDC, are really keen for access to testing and therefore, the cost of tests should actually be reduced quite dramatically for that access to occur. And so I think even in South Africa, I'm aware that organizations such as CDC, Africa CDC and WHO are really trying to support within South Africa at least the access to the antigen tests because they are quite useful, especially when there are outbreaks in order for one to have access and therefore contribute to the actual containment processes. But you're right, it's quite interesting when you look at countries like Israel, I think even the UK or even the United States, I think those tests are, especially the point of care tests, are certainly being made more widely available and should really be less expensive, if not free, in order for want to have access and to manage the actual outbreaks. Mm, yes.
Mm. In terms of the possible fourth wave, are you at the NICD, are you still looking at it being around about the December period or has that changed at all?
I think we're still waiting for the modelers to collate whatever information they do require in order for us to really get a sense of when one does expect a resurgence. Perhaps that resurgence may look very different, and it may be different across the different provinces. And of course, we do take into account what the current variants are, the level of exposure that people have had in terms of natural infection, the contribution of vaccines, for example. So all these various parameters will have to be taken into account to give us a sense of what a so-called resurgence or fourth resurgence may look like. I'm hoping that at least in terms of severe disease hospitalizations, we should really see, I hope, a different pattern. So really key now is really to really look at what's actually happening with regard to the current rates of vaccination and hospitalizations and the effect of vaccines under those circumstances.
And at this stage, there's still no decision on under 18s receiving a vaccine.
I think as well, I think there are discussions, I think. But I think, you know, given where we want to be in terms of really focusing on individuals that are at higher risk, so, you know, the above 50 or above 60 age categories, I think we really need to get a good sense of what we have achieved. I did notice the president announced, I think that it was 50% of those, 50% in that particular age category actually been vaccinated. So that means we still have a way to go in terms of vaccine. So I think trying to focus on the under 18s may not necessarily be a high priority. I think it will come along with some decision. But I think at this time, I think the focus is really on the more vulnerable age groups that need the attention. It's quite interesting in the UK, the advice is not to, it's to offer that vaccine to those less than 18. And they have a choice, therefore, of whether they want the vaccine, given that the thoughts were that in that particular age category, the contribution of vaccines versus natural infection, the benefits did not appear to be that obvious in that particular age category or below that particular age category.
And that's where we leave it. Professor Adrian Puren, thank you, as always.